Did I miss one of our talk shows?
No, I mean, you did, but that was on purpose.
I'll take a look around because we didn't record Sunday, but I still should have had something to edit for Sunday, right?
Yeah, so on the 17th, it was a show with just you and I.
Okay.
I don't remember what we talked about.
Nor do I. Or
must have been a great show.
I know. I'm sure it was.
You're listening to the Music Manual Podcast for March 13th, 2012. Learn more at musicmanual.com.
Hi, and welcome to another Music Manual. I am Tom, and with me is Doug.
Hey, we're here with Slacker Manument or something.
Yeah, we
were just discussing how you lost our best show ever.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily lost. It could possibly have been put out there by the time this...
Mislaid.
Yeah. So I got to find it. But yeah, you were flying somewhere last week, and we couldn't do the show. And then I ended up actually taking a trip, so it worked out perfectly.
Yeah.
It was a last-minute trip. But then in between then... I realized that we had recorded a show and I had not edited it and put it out. So somewhere around here, there's a show that we did there, but there was no guest. So we haven't, we didn't lose anything important. It's just us talking. Not that that's not important. And that's what the people want, right?
Yes.
So if hopefully I'll find it by the time this comes out, and then this entire conversation will just be silly.
Yeah.
Or,
and we also skipped a music show.
Yes.
In that time period. So that goes into our slacker nature. But we didn't miss the music show the week before that. So why don't we talk about that real quick?
Sure.
Did we talk about the President's Day picks?
I don't think so.
I don't think we did. I remember we talked about Malaventura. And I think when I said that I had played Malaventura, that I hadn't, but that it was actually on the show that was the next show after that. Because you played Malaventura like a week or two before.
Okay.
The 18th, which is the February 18th is when the show was released, the one that I played Malaventura. And it started off as a show where I wasn't going to have a theme. You know, most of the time I try to theme stuff. But I was just going to say, I really like this You Can Unlearn Guitar track that was called Kill Myself. Yeah. It really spoke to me in my moments of law school madness. but if you listen to, you know, the discography of You Can Unlearn Guitar, most of the stuff doesn't sound anything like this track. It's kind of avant-garde in the sort of like free music archive avant-garde sense of the word. But this song is totally like, you know, pop punk, like, you know, could be radio fodder. But I love it. That was the second track I played. I also played Commodore by Pisu. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but something. Pisu. Perhaps.
I think you're right. And I think that's another one that I may have also... played a song by them recently as well.
I know that Linux Outlaws.
Oh, no, you know what? I'm just recognizing it because I put the show together. Never mind. I was like, I know I've seen that name before, and it's like, oh, yeah, when I went to go get the track.
But they play, I think Dan might have played it on Rat Hole Radio and on Linux Outlaws. That's Dan Lynch. For anybody that's new who hasn't been with us, we interviewed him with him, had an interview with him like a year and a half ago now, I guess.
And the track that you took that from is actually a compilation disc that's on Bandcamp called Disker Parada.
I don't know if Commodore, probably it is, but Pisu has stuff on Jamendo. You can go to Jamendo and get their stuff not off of that compilation, but I've had that compilation. I don't remember when that compilation was released, but I know... soon after it was released is when I discovered it, and I've played some tracks from it before. I know I've played Gasolina off of it. I'm not looking at it right now. I just know that one off the top of my head.
I'd like to point out, too, that much like, we had him on the show. They were from Barcelona.
Freak Fandango?
As well. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Freak Fandango Orchestra. I was about to say that myself.
Yeah. So it's a compilation of Barcelona Creative Commons artists, which... that's what they were talking to them. I remember they were another one of the few people we spoke with who said there actually is a pretty good community for it where they're from.
And one of the bands, they knew one of the bands that was on it. Like, they had mentioned them before it even came up. I played La Batalla off of this, and K was, you know what, I'm not even going to try to pronounce the next word. What something with upside down exclamation mark and appropriately
the right side up one. Yeah,
but anyway, I mentioned that I was doing a no theme.
Yes.
And so I talked about the two tracks that were sort of in the no theme, and I wanted to, I really wasn't able to fit those in a theme, you know, or if I was get them in a theme, it was going to just be me trying too hard to do the theme.
Okay.
But then I was like, well, there's President's Day, so let me see what's going on with President's Day. And I don't know if I mentioned this on the show. I think I told you if I didn't. But I downloaded all of the quote-unquote records catalog and all of the Stone Age records catalog during my semester break.
Yeah.
And so I've got all of the Bomb the Music Industry stuff because they're on quote-unquote records. And so for I played one of their tracks this year for President's Day. I'm giving up on rock and roll. And that was probably the song that inspired sort of the mini theme, because it was like, huh, President's Day. Never really thought about doing a theme for that, but here's a track that's got in its name. So let me see something else about the about a president. And then I had Presidente Yaba Aiba by Malaventura, which you mentioned, which is a public domain mark one. And then I had Arrogant Sons of Bitches with Kill the President. And I think I played Arrogant Sons of Bitches before, which is like the greatest punk band name ever, I think. Although Bomb the Music Industry is pretty great as well.
I like the You Can Unlearn Guitar.
That is a good name as well, but they're not, although that one track is kind of punk rock, I mean, it's sort of like pop punk. In general, it's not. But Arrogant Sons of Bitches is no longer around, or as they are called in polite company, ASOB. Although SOB is kind of, mean, you know, you can't get away from that.
Right.
But anyway, they're no more. And I don't know if it's the lead singer or who exactly it is, but the guy who runs quote-unquote records, I think. But if it's not that guy, definitely the guy, there's one of the guys from ASOB is in Bomb the Music Industry. So you could, but you can, there's like a definite difference. Like ASOB is like a, definitely a ska punk band. And Bomb the Music Industry is just sort of like all over the place. It's sort of like one man punk, you know, like synth punk, but it's kind of all over the place. It's very sort of like art punk, but not like trippy, like not going quite into like what you might call avant-garde, but it's sort of like more, it's more hipster, maybe.
Okay. I don't know,
hipster's punk, but in a cool way, not in a I'm too cool to be cool way. I don't know. Bomb the Music Industry is amazing. I don't care if they're hipster punk or what. I will still love them even if they're hipsters. And I'm not gonna get rid of them just because they're too popular. That's all I'm saying. So what about your tracks? We've gotten through all of that.
From what I can remember, you know, a couple weeks ago, I know the, you know, there's a hip hop track, Bitter Business, where the it threw me off when I first saw the cover, because it kind of looks like the cover of a classical album. So I thought that was very odd. It's by Titus 12, and it's just a electronic / hip hop dubstep thing.
Oh, yeah.
Which I've been posting that stuff. And the next one I was really surprised by. Now, it is a North African band called I believe it's pronounced Lesazo, maybe. And the title is Tai Bate Jugui. I haven't heard it recently, so I can't remember how they pronounce it in the song. But I found this one interesting. It was on Free Music Archive. It was a good song. I was listening to it, and I was like, oh, that's actually kind of cool what they're doing there. And it's released under a free art license.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
I had never heard of that before. It looks just basically like a copy less or a copy left license, but it's in version 1.3. But I am unfamiliar with this license. It linked to it from the song. It's at artlibre.org/license, and then it's the language English one. And I'm reading it. There's a preamble. There's definitions of what you can do with it, the scope of how you can use it, how to distribute it, and you have the freedom to modify, related rights, which is giving a rise to the author's rights, as they say it. So I'm assuming that means, you know, like a share alike sort of, or just, you know, attribution sort of thing. It's just a different type of language. And I don't know how long it's been around. I don't know if it's just a thing in certain parts because they won't let them use Creative Commons.
So they've done this.
So they did this. I mean,
it's not Creative Commons.
Yeah.
So, totally not Creative Commons.
And at the bottom, it says that it was from 2007 that this was made. And you can make reproductions and distribute the license without any changes. And I don't know. I found that interesting. I liked the song as it was. I didn't choose it just specifically because of this, but I thought when I saw that, I was interested in seeing what that was all about. So if anybody knows any more about the background of the free art license, I'd like to hear it. See what the whole thing is. I mean, how could it have been around since 2007 and we've never heard of it?
Well, I had seen it on Jamendo, but I had sort of stayed away from it because I didn't know what its deal was. And there was a license, and it's not this one, I don't think.
Okay.
But there was a license called called the Artistic License. Yeah, that's what it's called.
Are you sure? Because isn't that when you do something like rhyme banana with Montana and you where you mispronounce something so it will rhyme, because banana and Montana actually do rhyme. Isn't that called Artistic License?
Yes, it is. But there's actually a legal document that also is called the Artistic License. The Pearl Foundation is who created it. So Pearl, not really artistic.
Pearl as in like the language Pearl?
Yes. Okay. So I don't know the history of it, but I do know that the FSF did not approve the first version as a free software license.
Okay.
They did the second, but there were some things that were bad about it, or that, you know, that some people thought were bad. So, this is what the Free Software Foundation said about it. It says, too vague. Some passages are too clever for their own good, and their meaning is not clear. So it was basically just...
Too clever? What are they saying? It sounded smart-ass?
Maybe that they were trying to be...
Or they were trying to sound like they were lawyers, but they weren't?
Yeah, I don't really...
Yeah, it's hard to say. No. I would say from that answer, it sounds like they were vague on what their reasoning was, which is ironic.
Well, I mean, that's just I pulled that one quote. I mean, I'm sure that they gave like a longer.
Nope, I'm going to say that's what they gave as their answer.
I mean, I can read out the whole thing.
No,
here.
Thank you. You have a whole other show to do that.
It's only a couple sentences.
Okay.
We cannot say that this is a free software license because it is too vague. Some passages are too clever for their own good, and their meaning is not clear. We urge you to avoid using it except as part of the disjunctive license of Pearl. So actually, that's not entirely more. Doesn't give us a hell of a lot more than what we already had on Wikipedia.
Yeah, and I don't understand why they would be using it for Pearl. That's really weird that they would have an artistic license on a programming language. I just find that strange. But I suppose the whole Creative Commons and the GNU license and everything came out of that's how it originally started, was the being able to open source code and use and share like PHP and other things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why they called it this. I think that maybe, you know, they were talking about it, them trying to be too clever, so maybe naming it the Artistic License was part of them trying to be too clever, naming it after something that's not, you know, like a legal license, like the type of artistic license that you were mentioning. So yeah. I don't know. It's the second version of it has been approved, so I don't know what they changed or anything like that. But just for anybody who is more familiar with software out there, this license that Tom is talking about is not the artistic license. It is called the free art license.
Yes, and I'd like to know if there are any other musicians that are on it, because I'd like to know more about it and what the benefits are of using this as opposed to Creative Commons or public domain, or just because that's what we do here. We like to learn about how people can share music, free culture, things like that, artistic culture. So let us know if you got anything for us. And the next thing that I played is just from it's actually a compilation that I've downloaded like a couple years ago. It was released in 2010. It's from our friend at Block Sonic, and it was a compilation he did called Fantastic, Incredible, Stupendous. And the song is by Christopher Mark called Bury the Doubt. It's just a catchy little tune. I liked it. And I've had that, so I decided to play it. It pulled up on my queue. And then the last one I played, it's another cool compilation from Block Sonic. I was kind of going through those just because of the show we had with him. And a lot of his earlier stuff, I missed a lot of them. And then I started listening to him again in the past year. A lot of the compilations he put out. So this one is called, good luck with me pronouncing this one right. The song is called Methychlorozoic.
It's methyl. Methylchloroisothiazolinoine. I'm not sure about the end. But yes. It's definitely methylchloral iso.
Right. But a song by Josh Woodard, and he calls it rock, and I was digging on it. I liked it. But again,
you played Josh Woodard recently.
Yes.
Not?
Yes, I have. He seems to put out quite a lot of stuff.
He does. And I'm sure he's a nice guy, but he does not do interviews, which kind of irritates me.
Oh, you did try to contact him.
Yeah. And he just said, basically that he doesn't like interviews, essentially. I'd have to go back and get his exact wording. I mean, yeah. he wasn't uppity about it. It was just sort of like, it's not something he likes. He's not comfortable with for whatever reason. I don't know if
that's
he had
cool.
a bad experience or what. Yeah. So,
there's nothing wrong with that. It's just interesting when you come across that. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be awesome if he came on the show and told us about it, but
yeah,
about his bad experience with interview. Cause I feel like our interviews are not like, if he wants a laid-back interview, he can get a laid-back interview with us. I mean, like, we're not scary, I don't think. Maybe we're scary.
And I like his style. I've played a lot of his stuff, but I know that I've played him before because I know the name. So anyway.
He's got some song about God that is kind of like, it's just sort of like basic. I mean, the lyrics are really good, but it's... It's dark, so maybe
are you
darkness.
Because I know I played his song. I'm looking through his album list here, and one of them is on the Goodbye Hello compilation. And are you talking about the song Cherubs? Because I know I've played that before.
I don't remember.
Oh, I don't remember either. I'm asking you, and I'm the one who picked it. So I don't...
I think if you could name every single one of his tracks, and the name would not... it would just have to pop up again, and I'd have to listen to it.
But so them's my picks. In the show notes that we have here, I see that you have, first of all, I see you have a note in there for CC Hits. Is the new site up?
No, it's not. But we don't do a good job or a job at all, really, of like putting links from the tracks that we put on the show, to vote for CC Hits. So I just sort of wanted to remind people about the fact that it exists, just because we get new listeners every once in a while. So that was part of it.
Okay.
Also, I don't think that we've talked about the fact that Straight to Hell has fallen straight to hell out of the ranking. What's going on, man?
I don't know. I'm not quite sure.
I don't know if he tweaked the algorithm. We're going to have him on when the new site does launch. But Straight to Hell is 81 right now, and in Lorenzo's Music actually has a couple tracks that We All Fall Down, I think, is 26. I'd have to look.
Oh, cool.
There's another one in there too, but Sweet Sister Starlight, which I believe you played a while back. by Fitting the Conniptions is 80 and Straight to Hell is 81. And they both dropped out of the monthly top tracks in November.
Hmm.
You know, they weren't in it. I mean, the Lorenzo's music track, Straight to Hell, had been in it for since December of 2010.
Yes, so we were on there pretty strong for a while. And also, I'd like to point out that as of this moment, right, Josh Woodard has the number 2 spot.
how
coincidental.
Yeah. But so I just noticed, you know, that Fitting the Conniptions were on it.
Mm-hmm.
April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November, and then they dropped off right when you guys did. So I don't know if he tweaked the algorithm there to, because stuff was hanging up too high, or
so like maybe we shouldn't have been up there that long, and then he fixed it.
Well, that's kind of how I felt about it anyway.
Oh, you bastard.
I mean, just looking at like the amount of tracks that they've put in there.
Yeah.
And like just like looking at it from like a how charts normally work, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like songs don't usually, even in like the Clear Channel era where you hear the same thing over and over again, things don't usually stay up there for a year.
Yeah.
You know, which is what Straight to Hell did.
Right.
Which is impressive.
But I do have to say, though, that is our most popular track on Jamendo. So that might have, and I haven't checked Jamendo lately, but I know that it has finally started to turn towards the newer stuff. Because, I mean, Straight to Hell is from, like, 3 albums ago. And, but yeah, that one was still on Jamendo, mainly on Jamendo, too, was our... was downloaded the most from, so I don't know where it was being picked up or who was promoting it, but yeah, that track was always the biggest one there.
Yeah, and if you look at the total votes, and of course it's been on there for a long time, for basically a year and a half, it's got 235 votes, whereas this Fitting the Conniptions track only has 107 votes. But
maybe he changed the time period so that it would be in the
Well, it had 6 extra influencing shows.
Uh-huh.
So the influencing shows has something to do with it.
Hmm.
So okay. It's probably just a coincidence, but we can have him talk about it. Well, here's another one. Chart Place 77 fell out in November as well. Of course, then there's 2 that were December. There's another November. I mean, stuff has got to fall out at some point. So. Yeah. I mean, it's been around for a while, but only, a year and a half or 2, you know, or something. So,
and eventually one of these days I'm going to figure out the API and do like what they do over on the Bugcast, where you get the little button next to it. But if I remember correctly, he said he's kind of hand doing that, but that might be the thing that that's what they said on the Bugcast, that's their hand doing it. But I think on CC Hits, they said that they were going to kind of fix the way that it works so that you could do something more like that.
I did poke around the new site, which is not the API, of course. But,
right.
And the new site looks great.
Oh, cool.
I mean, in comparison, at least. I mean, looks was certainly not one of the high points of the, isn't of the current CC Hits. So I think it's a vast improvement.
Yeah.
All the back-end stuff that's great on it, you know, it just kind of looks like 1995, so
it was function before
I think that's the way to go, but you know, to take it to the next level, I think he's gonna have to make it look good. And I think he, you know, the new one, I haven't looked at it in a while, but I remember being quite impressed with it when I did take a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have him on, talk about you know, why he made some of the decisions that he did and everything. But they are up to like 500 tracks or something. 561 tracks.
That's pretty cool. In a similar sort of vein, another thing that I think we even talked to both Craig from Open Metalcast and the Bugcast about, or no, not the Bugcast, but John from CC Hits about, was a automatic show generator. podcast right. generator. And I see that you found, I want to say that Craig told us about it and said he was going to post GitHub about it and send it to us. And I don't know if we just didn't talk about it, but I see you have the post of where it is on GitHub, which we can put in the show notes. It's just a Python script that he has on, actually it's a GitHub gist. So it's just a one page of code you can download and use and alter, and he's got some notes in there. But it shows how you can create a MP3 show or output an MP3 show like music files all together. Like the way I have to do it right now is I go into Audacity and, you know, import them, line them up, then export it, you know, stuff like that, and then I got to label it. Whereas this, what you do is you just say, search this for it. Search this. I'm assuming from what I can see on it, my Python script is very green as far as reading it. But, you know, computer language is computer language in many forms, sort of. But it looks like it just searches for the folder and looks for the stuff and puts out and outputs what's there. Now, what's cool is I remember him saying that he only had one for AUG. But from what I can see here, it looks like it takes the MP3, or it can find an MP3 as well and turn it and output it as an AUG, maybe.
Yeah, I wasn't really, really sure. When he sent this to me, I was looking for something completely different.
Oh.
And then I looked at this and I was like, let me re-explain what I'm talking about. And he was like,
this was something I had talked to them about, and I think it would be cool. I just need to. I'm still, you know, not versed in a lot of different programming languages, so I kind of think I know how it works. I don't know. I can test it out. I know people who can tell me how it works, so that might be the route I actually go.
Yeah.
Like the guy sitting next to at work, he would be interested in this. So I might give that a try. And I like the output he explains at the bottom, that the example is it tells you what the genre is. You can set up the comment. And even include an image, an album image. So that's kind of cool. That album image is the only thing that we miss from our output, or at least what Audacity says it can do. So there you go. So we'll post a link to that because it's just a just GitHub. So it's just a numbered thing. It doesn't have a title on it.
You had some like news stuff.
Wanted to go over a couple of things briefly. These are essentially like, I'd like to get your opinion on it. I know my opinion, okay. And that'll come out while we talk about it. And then I'd like to see, it's always interesting to get a different perspective. But one is a story that was posted on themusicvoid.com. And it was just essentially, the title is Google Music is Losing Users Weekly. And now that I say that, that's actually a fairly hard thing to say. Google Music is Losing Users Weekly. Anyway.
Yeah.
So now I've only perused this. And this is, I mean, when Google Music first came out, it came out around the same time as the Amazon Music Player. And just trying both of those out. And the Google Music one is definitely cooler looking, and it does some cool stuff. But the Amazon one has the Amazon store. So I tried both. I have both. And I have myself even kind of forgotten about my Google Music account. Now, they have a tie-in that obviously they built the music store in the the Android Market. So you can now use that with it. But I don't really have an Android device. I have a Kindle Fire, but that doesn't use the Android store. So I can't even access that on it. But I can use, you know, the Amazon one because it's built by Amazon. So I've been steering more towards that. But there are just a couple of cool features that the Google Music Store and, you know, storage space has. And one of them, if you go to the magnify.blogspot.com, which is their... which is like their music blog, they just have a button that goes add to Google Music, and they have free music every day. You can search by genre, and when you click on that button, it automatically goes and syncs into your Google Music. And if you have a Google device, it syncs, you know, that's basically your cloud sync. So
magnify.blogspot?
I believe so. Either that or Magnifier. Magnifier.blogspot.com. So that you can just... click on, you know, whatever it goes, add to Google Music or whatever it says, and they do reviews.
I don't mean to be like, you know, a Debbie Downer, but This looks like a bunch of not Creative Commons music.
No, it is not. But Kanye West. But it is. But the thing is I'm talking about this in the sense that there is a way they promote artists. Music is free there. No, it is not Creative Commons. But you know what I'd like. Basically, what I wanted to talk about is maybe they should delve into that. They have the Android Market. They have the Android Store where you can actually buy the music and sync this stuff. This is just their blog site. You know, any music can go on the Google Music Player.
True.
I was just bringing this up as this an example, and it does a neat thing. And this is what I was going to say is I think the way that they should bring it up, and one of the things they said in the article was they're just saying, oh, they're not that worried because they haven't done a real promotional push for it yet, which is very true. On the Magnifier site, what I like is this button that just goes get free music, and you click on it, and boom, it's in your Google site. I would like to have that. I want to put that on my site. And that's what I was getting at with this site.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So, like, independent artists could, they could just have a, if Google had an API, they could just slam it into people's Google Music Store.
Correct. That was and that's what I, because, and there's.
Until then, I thought everything you were saying was stupid because I've never, I have no interest in Google Music, but the punchline, it was worth the wait.
Okay, good. But that's why, so I think that they're not utilizing it enough. Now, the whole thing they're doing is they've got the whole Android Market, they've got the whole WebKit browser, they've got, the Android operating system and Android OS, all that stuff. And then here with the music store, it's like, well, I don't know how to do any of this. How do I get my stuff to work like this? So that's something I think they should think about. They are promoting independent music, but not really. Not in the sense where I can go to Jamendo and create, you know, my page on there. I think that
I mean, when you see Kanye West as, like, you know, one of the first things you see, that's, you know, that's sort of targeting your market there, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, it's still a music store. And this is just the blog we're talking about. I'm talking about Google Music in general.
Right. And I don't know, I mean, how Google Music is identifying themselves and promoting themselves other than their blog.
Right. But the actual thing itself is if you go to, I believe it's music.google.com, and you can just create a music player from your Google account there. And that's where it all stores. It's just that blog can talk to it in the sense that they review music and you go, if you want to listen to it, just put it in your player. And then all your stuff is here. Now, the player itself is really cool, and I like it. I don't know if you have one or not.
No, they, like, so this is recommended in Android Market for me, Holiday, the GitHub Kids. I don't know what all I've got in here.
And you can actually upload your music to it in the player, so you can upload your own music to it.
Yeah, I tried it out.
It's essentially a cloud player, yeah.
I was kind of like, not really interested. I don't think it Scrabble's The Last FM, if I remember correctly.
You can get something that Scrabble's it. There's a plugin. Because mine actually Scrabble's The Last FM.
I just don't need a different... I just mentioned that I do kind of need a different player, but...
You did. And this one, you can build plugins for it. But the thing is, and this is going back to the integrating everything stuff, is that this player essentially is your browser. And if you use the Chrome browser, you can use Chrome plugins that will talk to the Google Music Player, which is how I Scrabble The Last FM. Because there is a Google Scrabble Last FM plugin for Chrome that does it. So, like, everything that they're doing is talking to each other, which they've been doing that with a lot of the things. But I would also like to see the ability for me to, I mean, like, once again, they can find a way to somebody built a plugin for it. And they did it. Now, I want to know how to get that music button. That's that sort of thing. Like, I just wish that they would spend more time on it. It seems like they focus on one thing, and then it's like, oh, shoot, somebody else took it. Then they go focus on another thing, which has been classic Google stuff. I mean, they do that all the time. And
Was their limit on uploads to it?
For the free one, I believe it's 2 gigabytes.
See, I think that was my issue, because I have, like, 100 gigabytes or something.
And that would be for a paid one.
Yeah, and I don't know.
Well, and also, for people like us, over the years, we've had to figure out ways to get our music wherever we are. So I've already got a setup. Yeah, I've already had. Yeah, and now everybody is trying to get that. So take your music everywhere. It's for the
damn kids these days.
Exactly.
I had to walk uphill both ways to get my music when I was a kid.
Right. That is.
Now I just put it on Google Music.
That is precisely it. Is it's like so my son can figure out a way to listen to his music everywhere he is. Whereas me, I just have that, like, I have stuff finagled all over the place, and there's a server that I access that I don't need to have this cloud service going on because I have my own cloud service going that I did through some other script that somebody else I know wrote or some other sort of plug-in on my phone that somebody has that I can access it from, that sort of thing. Whereas most kids aren't going to go through those hoops, and I did because it was annoying. And now you got this. So that's, I just wanted to put that out there. I think it's cool service. I do not think they're utilizing it enough, and I think they could be doing more. That was my point on it.
Sounds like it.
Let's see. What one do I want to talk about? I don't know if I want to talk about the second one, to tell you the truth. It was just the title kind of got me. Yeah. I mean, I think we've given him enough play, and I don't really think so. It's a story about Kim.com, the guy from Mega Upload, and he's bitching about the government again, saying that they're protecting an outdated monopolistic business model. But the problem is, and I think I've said this before, is I don't need him to be the spokesperson for the stuff we stand for, because I think he is a sleazy bastard.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's any question that he's a sleazy bastard.
Yeah, but it just makes, it's like when Larry Flint was talking about free speech. Yes, you are, you know.
I think that's a very good parallel. But see, the thing that both of those guys have that we don't have, Tom, is money.
Very true. And also, the media does want to watch them act the way they act.
Right. So, you know, if it takes somebody being a douchebag to get people to pay attention, then by all means, be a douchebag.
Right. But it's just that...
Hey, look, better him going to jail than me. That's all I'm saying.
Very good point, but it's just that it's such a stereotypical, like, it creates a stereotype of what the people who are claiming, like, no, this is wrong, you know.
I agree, but there's also, like, this sort of goes into my basic sort of theory of, you know, movements, is that you have to have people like on the far reaches to be like the crazy people.
Yeah.
To give the people that are not crazy something they can point to. Because when, you know, people on, you know, from Sony Music are like, oh, those hippies with their Creative Commons. And they're like, no, we're not like Kim.com. He's the guy who is not respecting your license.
Yeah.
We're sharing music of people that want their music to be shared. This is totally different. But without somebody doing that, it makes it harder for us to differentiate ourselves. You know, like it's all just one big music freedom pile if we don't have some asshole to point to and say, no, look at what he's doing. Uh-huh. We could be doing that, but we're not. And so I don't know. And I see... You know, this is sort of the, like, FSF versus OSI sort of thing for the techies. Like, people love to hate on the FSF because they're, like, a lot of the stuff they do is kind of outlandish. But I'm like, that's great, because then when people go into companies, they can say, this is not what we do. They have something to point to and say, we know you don't like this. They have, like, an example. And I think you got to have that. You have to have somebody pulling it out. I mean, obviously there are lines that shouldn't be crossed. Mm-hmm. I mean, but in my opinion, I don't know that Larry Flint or Kim.com necessarily crosses those lines. I mean, there's legal lines that Kim.com.
Okay. There you go. So we were talking about that. Basically, that's a good point. It's that we can say this is the extreme that you think it is, but this is what we do. Is that kind of what you're saying about?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean,
I get that. That makes sense.
Specifically in his case, I feel like if everybody's too scared to break the law, then the law's never going to be changed. You know, it takes somebody getting arrested. I mean, this happens in every sort of cultural movement. You know, like Martin Luther King had to go to jail for the civil rights movement in the 60s to work. Like, if nobody was willing to cross that line, then it wasn't going to do it. It's, you know, it wasn't going to get the attention that it needed. And you have to, I mean, in the legal, from the legal perspective, like, those sorts of things can't, I mean, you can go through the politics of it, of course. But, you know, for, if it's going to be like a court decision, there has to be somebody, you know, a case for the Supreme Court to say, no, this is not, we're not going to ever get any help in copyright from the Supreme Court, as Golan has showed us. And I don't personally have a problem with that. I mean, copyright is Congress, and, you know, if we want, if people are serious about wanting copyright reform, then they're going to have to vote in new Congress people. So,
yeah,
it's, I mean, it's some level, I mean, conceptually it's really simple. So, I mean, obviously it's a hard thing to do to get elected, but, I mean, the Supreme Court has said several times, you know, a few times in the last decade, we're not touching this. This is something you're going to have to go through the legislative process for.
And I still have yet to know any musician that was actually affected by the mega upload thing. Except for the couple of stories that they covered, which, you know what? That's great press for those guys. Like, people who are actually like, I lost all my music because of mega upload going down. And I want to say I kept seeing the same ones over and over again. Otherwise, it was really just for passing things along. I don't know how many people were actually storing it there or how geared towards it was. But I want to say it's just because of that commercial push they did with all those musicians that is what made it go in that way. So maybe that helps what you're talking about, and the fact that instead of it just being people, you know, trading stuff with each other, that they're trying to say it's more of like it was a place for people to share their music, which is the way it always comes off. And that is not what it was. It was a way for people to share the music they have, not for musicians to share their music with people. But once again, that gets in the whole thing is like, well, they bought the music, they should be able to share it just the same way you would as recording a CD. Yeah, I don't know. But
yeah, that's too much, you know.
Yeah.
Too long of a discussion there.
That's the entire argument, really. But so this is the whole thing, is he's just calling back saying that they need to update their model, which is what everybody says, and that I agree with. So there's an article. We'll post the notes on it. Okay.
I did want to say I was inspired by your discussion of Google Music to install it on my phone. Oh. Well, what I was first inspired to do was to check it out. But then I remembered one of the other reasons that I decided Google Music was not worth my time, and that is because they do not have a Linux manager for, you know, it says, add your collection from iTunes, Windows Media Player, or folders to Google Music.
Hmm.
Download Music Manager. Well, oh, I take that back. Actually, I was just totally wrong about all that. I just saw iTunes and Windows Media Player and didn't look further. So they've changed that.
Yes.
I know for a long time that you couldn't. So
the whole thing, it's just the same way that they're doing it with photos, that they're trying to sync it with all Android devices so that it will happen automatically.
Why do you have to download something?
That's a good question. I don't know.
.deb stuff here, but why can't I just do like a folder upload within the browser? They made the damn browser.
You can.
Why don't they make it good?
I think.
Well, okay. Well, it's not giving me that option.
Hmm.
It says, please select your download package, and it's got a .deb for Ubuntu and a .rpm for Fedora.
Interesting.
So I'm gonna check it out.
Yeah, give it a, because that's the one thing is, like, I don't get to look at it from an Android perspective, and I would really like to see, and like I said, I tried to do it with my Kindle Fire, and I would like to know your experience with trying it out with Android devices, and just let me know what you think of it, because I've just been using it for, like, I'll go to whenever there's free music in the Android marketplace or over on that Magnifier site that I told you about. That's basically what I've been doing with my music, and I have only uploaded a couple albums. So
when I looked at it before, one of the things that irritated me about it too was that it was so much bigger than the default player. So it looks like they've separated them out now, though, so that now that there's that may be because I've got Cyanogen mod. I don't know if I had Cyanogen mod at the time. I'll have to take a look at it so I can say more about it next time.
Yeah, I'd like to hear what you think.
Pressing buttons and giving you a play-by-play while we're
right.
while we're recording here. So,
well, great. That's all I had as well. So I guess we will see you all next time, and thank you for joining us on the Music Manumit podcast at musicmanumit.com.